Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Story 1. I lived in a cramped flat in Malasaña, Madrid, sharing a small kitchen with two roommates I barely knew. My name is Anna, and at 23, I had moved here from California to study art at a local academy. I'd felt a fierce excitement when I arrived, convinced the city's pulse would ignite my creativity. A few weeks in, the novelty had worn off, and the endless crowds now made me feel like a tiny cog. That Tuesday, I left my apartment around 2 o'clock, determined to grab milk and bread from the panaderia a few blocks away, feeling restless. I wore a light denim jacket and my favorite sneakers, though they were scuffed and sore from constant walking. And the sun was generous, hanging at an angle that lit the terracotta rooftops and sent golden light across the sidewalks. I never understood how Madriders tolerated heat until I moved here. In California, I could control my temperature, crank the AC, shade the windows. Here, I wore a single tank top and still felt the city's breath on my skin. My tote bag had seen better days, its seams fraying and straps stretching dangerously thin. That morning, I'd rolled out of bed to the shrill beep of my alarm, stretching and hesitating before dragging myself to the bathroom mirror and staring into my own eyes, already dull with exhaustion. I'd glanced at the piled-up dishes in the sink, then thrown on clothes without thought, my hair in a careless bun. Lately, I'd been feeling more homesick than usual. I'd spoken to my brother Jim on a grainy video chat the night before, watching him joke with Mom from his dorm room. He'd waved at the camera, his smile wide as ever, promising he'd visit next semester. I'd laughed and said I'd save all the good tapas spots for him. But when I closed my laptop, the apartment felt emptier than usual. My roommates were asleep after a late shift, and I'd spent the night sketching empty streets that never looked the same twice in my drawings. I wondered if I was starting to lose myself in my own imagination. Madrid, in theory, was mine to explore, but I often found myself lost in familiar routines. Grocery runs, art classes, late-night cups of café con leche, paid with a grin from the barista who never learned my name. I liked the anonymity at first. No one cared if I slipped into the flat without speaking. But solitude sank in too deep sometimes. I missed hearing my brother's voice in the hallway and the way he'd groan when he saw my budget-friendly cereal choices. My phone vibrated with a text from my dad. "Hope classes are going well. Give me a call later." That morning, as I glanced at the time on my phone, it struck me that I was running late. My class in the afternoon was canceled, so I'd given myself extra time to wander. I wondered if I should swing by my favorite gallery on Calle de la Montera, where a new exhibit promised bold prints. But I shook my head, deciding to stick to my plan. Straight to the panaderia, back home, sketch without distractions. Discipline felt necessary, a lifeline to keep me grounded when the city threatened to swallow me. My route to the Panaderia took me past an art supply store, its window cluttered with tubes of paint and half-finished canvases. I stepped inside to scan markers and brushes, thinking I might pick up a new tube of cadmium red, but the stall was empty. Lucky for my budget, but unlucky for my creativity. I stepped back into the sun and continued down Calle de la Palma, where a florist arranged crimson roses in vases, teasing out petals with gloved fingers. The intersection of Calle de la Palma and Fuencarral was a familiar crossroads, defined by neon pedestrian lights and the metallic screech of trams. I pressed the pedestrian button and heard the distant click of the signal. The countdown began. 20 seconds. 19. I shifted from one foot to the other, listening to my heartbeat, thump, thump, each beat rattling my ribcage. Then I saw him. He appeared from behind a parked motorcycle, walking toward me on the sidewalk. At first, I thought it might be a friend or one of my roommates catching up faster than expected. His body moved with an easy, familiar grace, and I thought, he looks like Jim. The second his face came into view, my blood turned to ice. He wore a dark green hoodie and faded jeans, the same exact outfit my brother Jim favored when he visited 6 months ago. His hair was the same shade of brown, cut in the same off-center part, those soft waves falling in familiar strands across his forehead. He stopped a few feet away, folding his arms and looking at me directly. The timer on the crosswalk signal ticked down to 8 seconds and then paused. Everything felt poised, suspended. The man's brown eyes locked onto mine, and a vertigo of recognition twisted through my chest. I knew my brother was back in Oregon, halfway across an ocean. He was in class at that moment, doing calculus or complaining about dorm food. There was no possible way he could be here, standing across from me in Madrid, less than 20 feet away. Eres Americana, verdad? He asked, his voice soft, with a hint of curiosity, not impatience. The words spilled out smooth and practiced, as though he'd been expecting me to speak English. My mouth felt dry, my tongue thick. I blinked again, which sent a wave of dizziness rushing through me. My heart pounded so loudly I thought the man might hear it. I realized I didn't speak enough Spanish to respond quickly. My brain felt like it was wrapped in cotton. I forced out, "You look exactly like my brother." The words came out flat in English. If he noticed, he didn't show it. Instead, his lips curved into a slow smile that echoed my brother's grin. Tu hermano debe ser muy guapo, entonces, he said with a light laugh. I heard the ghost of my brother's chuckle in his voice, funny, familiar, and utterly horrifying. Your brother must be very handsome. The crosswalk signal changed to green. He stepped forward as though crossing the street mattered more than what was happening. I clutched my bag strap, the canvas biting into my fingers. With every step he took, the bloody fear in my gut churned. He matched my pace at the curb, eyes never leaving mine. He took one step, then another, entering the crosswalk with deliberate slow strides. Each step echoed in my ears, punctuating the roar of the city. The pavement beneath him seemed to hum. He reached the other side, glanced back, and our eyes met for a final moment. My legs buckled. I stumbled onto the pavement and nearly fell, pressing my palms into the cold stone to steady myself. I stared at the space where he'd vanished into the flow of strangers. I never saw him again. Story 2. I don't usually get rattled on the job, but this one night still haunts me. I work nights as a security attendant at this old apartment building downtown. 24 stories, pretty much one of the oldest in the city. The kind of place where the wiring buzzes in the walls and the elevators creak like they're about to fall apart. I've been doing this gig for over a year, so I'm used to odd noises and the occasional weird vibe. But nothing prepared me for what happened that night. It was around 3 a.m., dead quiet except for the hum of the fluorescent lights at the front desk. Then the phone rings. I pick it up and say, "Hello, this is Draven at the front desk. How can I help you?" The voice on the other end was female, but it was all static and garbled. I couldn't make out most of what she said. The only thing I caught was the 23rd floor. I asked her to repeat it, trying to get more info like what apartment she was in, but it was just the same garbled mess in 23rd floor again. After a few minutes of this, I told her I couldn't understand and that I'd come upstairs to meet her. I figured maybe her phone was bad or something. I grabbed the key for the service elevator. The regular elevators were both already on the 23rd floor, which I thought was weird but shrugged off. The service elevator was older and usually stuck on the lower floors. I called it down from the 7th floor. When it arrived, I stepped in and pressed the button for the 23rd floor. The elevator didn't move and the inner door wouldn't close. That's when I opened the reset panel and suddenly it jolted upward with the doors still open, shaking like crazy. I was tense, staying toward the back of the elevator, heart pounding. It shot up fast and I swear the creaks and rattles sounded louder than usual. Then it stopped at 23. I stepped out and the doors shut behind me normally. The hallway was empty, dead silent. I walked slowly, checking every doorway, listening for any sound. A voice, footsteps, anything. Nothing. It felt like the whole floor was abandoned. I headed toward the main elevators, which still stood there with their doors wide open, like they were waiting. I was pretty spooked, but figured the elevators might just be glitching again, so I stepped inside, intending to go down and reset them. Then I heard it, the back stairwell door slamming shut somewhere behind me. I jumped out and rushed to the stairwell. No one there. The only thing out of place was the maintenance door to the machine room, slightly open. That room's at the very top, noisy as hell during the day, but eerie at night. Nobody ever goes up there except me, and I'm the only one with a key. I didn't want to go in, but curiosity and a rising sense of dread pushed me forward. The fluorescent lights flickered, barely lighting the cramped space full of clanking machinery. I called out, "Hello?" No answer. At the end of the room was the roof access door, cracked open just a bit. I hesitated but moved toward it. I stepped out onto the roof and looked around. It was pitch.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Pitch dark except for the dim city glow. Nothing there. I left the door ajar behind me, and as soon as I took a step forward, the door slammed shut hard. I froze. That door isn't light. It's heavy metal, and it takes real force to close it. No way the wind could do that. I grabbed the handle and pulled, but it stayed shut. I yanked it open, slammed it behind me, and sprinted back inside. The maintenance door slammed shut behind me and locked automatically. I didn't stop running until I got back to the 23rd floor hallway. I shoved my way into the elevator with the door still open, hit the button for the first floor, and watched the numbers tick down as the elevator shook and rattled again. When I hit the lobby, I plopped into my chair trying to calm down. Then the phone rang. I didn't even want to pick it up, but the ringing was relentless. I grabbed the receiver without saying a word. The same garbled female voice whispered, "23rd floor." No other words. I hung up immediately, turned off the ringer, and spent the rest of the night watching the security cameras of the parking garage, anywhere but upstairs. I never found out who called. There was no sign anyone had been on the 23rd floor or the roof. No one was supposed to be there except me. I don't know if it was some glitch in the building, a prank, or something else, but it still creeps me out. That heavy door slamming shut, the garbled voice repeating, "23rd floor." The elevators stuck with open doors. It was like the building itself was trying to tell me something. I quit going up there alone after that night. Story 3. I don't usually tell this story because people tend to brush it off like I'm making it up or exaggerating, but I swear on everything I love, this happened exactly how I'm about to tell it. My name's Dylan. I was 22 at the time, and I had just moved out of Brisbane with my folks after they sold our place. They bought this weird old property a few hours out in the countryside. New South Wales, middle of nowhere. Lots of land, barely any neighbors, just bush and silence. The kind of place you think is peaceful until you're actually living in it. Anyway, there was this big detached shed on the property, probably used for tools or machinery back in the day. I thought it'd be a good idea to turn it into my own little pad. Gave me space, some independence and a break from my parents. I fixed it up, put my bed, a desk, some shelves in there. It wasn't fancy, but it was good enough. From day one, though, it felt off. You know that feeling when you walk into a room and immediately want to walk back out? It was like that, but constant, even during the day. Still, I figured I was just being soft. It's an old place. It creaks, whatever. My dog, Rex, a big brown shepherd mix, stayed with me every night. He usually slept like a log right next to the bed, made me feel safer. 2 weeks in, around 11:30 at night, I was sitting at my desk on my laptop. I remember this clearly. I was watching YouTube and messaging a mate on Discord. Rex was asleep under the desk, snoring gently. I needed to take a piss, so I got up, opened the shed door, and stepped out. It was quiet, too quiet, honestly. No insects, no wind, no distant cars. Just silence, the kind that presses in on you. I looked up at the sky and it was packed with stars, ridiculously clear. I stood there for a second thinking, damn, city skies don't look like this. Then, bang! The shed door slammed shut behind me, hard. I spun around immediately thinking it was wind or maybe it didn't latch right. But when I grabbed the handle, it wouldn't move. I mean, wouldn't budge, like someone was holding it from the inside. I jiggled it, pushed, pulled, rammed it with my shoulder. Nothing. Then I heard it. Rex. First it was this low growl, like a warning. Then it turned into barking, angry, defensive barking. And then something changed. The bark turned into this scared yelping. I'd never heard him make sounds like that. I'm not small. I'm 6'5", solidly built. And I threw my entire weight into that door. I rammed it again and again, yelling Rex's name. Then suddenly, crack, the door flew open and I stumbled inside. Everything was pitch black. The light I left on wasn't just off. It was dead. I flicked the switch over and over. Nothing. Rex? I called out. Nothing. My eyes were still adjusting, but I reached over to where I kept my flashlight on the shelf, fumbled around, found it, clicked it on. And that's when my stomach dropped. Rex was in the farthest corner of the shed, like he had tried to wedge himself into the wall. He wasn't barking anymore. He was shaking. His eyes were closed tight, and his body was curled so tight it looked painful. Mate, it's okay, I said, taking a step. That's when the air changed. I don't know how to describe it. It felt like the air inside the shed got heavier, like something was still in there with us. I couldn't see it, but I could feel it, the way the hair stood up on the back of my neck. I knew we weren't alone. As soon as I stepped toward him, Rex launched off the ground and practically flew into my chest, 40 kilos of trembling dog clinging to me like he was trying to crawl inside my skin. I didn't think. I just ran. I didn't even close the door. I ran full speed to the main house, nearly dropped Rex twice. I burst through the front door and slammed it shut, locking it behind me. My mom came out of her room asking what was going on, but I couldn't speak. I just sat on the floor, heart racing, Rex still shaking in my arms. He wouldn't let me put him down. And after that night, he refused to go near the shed, not even within 20 meters. If I tried walking him past it, he'd dig his heels into the dirt and whine. I moved back into the main house that night, left all my stuff in the shed. Never went back in, not even during the day. I still don't know what was in there. I didn't see anything. But something was waiting, watching. And Rex knew it before I did. I'll never forget how terrified he looked in that corner, like he'd seen something I wasn't supposed to. And maybe I wasn't. Story 4. I live in Burnaby, just outside Vancouver. Nothing really exciting happens around here unless you count the occasional raccoon fight outside the dumpsters. I'm 29, work at a phone repair kiosk, and keep to myself mostly. I'm not the type who believes in ghosts or any of that supernatural crap. Or at least I wasn't until something happened that I can't stop thinking about, no matter how much I try to explain it away. It was a Thursday evening, just after 6. I remember because I always take the same sky train from Metrotown to Lougheed, then catch the 136 bus home. I was standing on the platform, scrolling through my phone, not really paying attention to anything around me. That's when I noticed her, this woman, maybe in her late 30s, messy hair, wearing a cheap, oversized coat like she just rolled out of a thrift store donation bin. She was wandering from person to person, asking for money. She had this weird, blank look in her eyes, like she wasn't all there. I've seen addicts around the stations before, but something about her made me feel off. When she reached me, she stopped dead in front of me and said, "Excuse me, could you spare some money? My brother's in the hospital and I want to buy him flowers." The way she said it, too calm, like she was reading from a script she'd rehearsed 1,000 times. No emotion, no urgency, just flat. I almost rolled my eyes. "Sure," I muttered, reaching into my wallet. I gave her a $5 bill and avoided eye contact. Honestly, I just wanted her to go away. She took it without a word and moved on to the next person. Then my train pulled in. I got on, found a window seat, and looked out as the train started moving. She was still on the platform talking to some other guy, holding out her hand. There's no way she could have gotten on. I watched her fade into the distance as the train picked up speed, crossing over the river and into the industrial stretch before the next station. 15 minutes later, I got off at Lougheed and went down to the bus loop. The 136 bus was already there. I remember thinking I was lucky. Usually I have to wait at least 10 minutes. The driver was still in the seat, reading a newspaper, so I hopped on and grabbed a seat near the middle. There weren't many people on board. We pulled out and headed toward North Road. I put in my earbuds, hit shuffle, and leaned back. About 10 minutes into the ride, the bus slowed down and stopped at a regular pickup point. Doors opened. I didn't even look up until I felt it. This weird shift in the air, like static or something, brushing against my skin. I looked up. She stepped onto the bus, same coat, same messy hair, and in her arms a bouquet of roses, fresh red, wrapped in clear plastic. She looked directly at me, eyes sharp this time, not blank, not glazed over, like she knew me. My stomach dropped. There's no way, no possible way. She was still at the SkyTrain station when I left. I saw her. She didn't get on the train. She couldn't have. And this was the only bus heading this direction. But there she was. She walked past me without a word, the scent of roses hitting me like a punch in the face. It wasn't sweet. It was overwhelming, almost rotting, like something left in water too long. She sat down 2 rows behind me. I couldn't breathe right. My mouth went dry. I turned around to look at her again. She was just sitting there, staring straight ahead, clutching those flowers like they were the last thing keeping her alive. I turned back around and hit the stop button. I didn't care where I was getting off. I wasn't staying on that bus. When the doors opened at the next stop, I bolted, didn't even glance back. I stood on the sidewalk, heart racing, trying to process what just happened. I thought about going back and confronting her, demanding to know how she got there, but my legs wouldn't move. The bus pulled away, and through the window, I saw her still staring straight ahead, still clutching those roses. I've told this story maybe twice, and every time I do, people say the same thing. "You probably just didn't notice her get on the train," or "She caught a cab. You're overthinking it." But I know what I saw. I watched her on that platform as the train pulled away. I watched the tracks behind us the whole ride. There was no shortcut, no stop between. No chance in hell she could have beat me there, let alone found a flower shop, bought a bouquet, and boarded the same bus. No one believes me. Honestly, I wouldn't believe me either. Story 5. I'm Kelechi. I live in Port Harcourt, Nigeria, Elalenwo to be specific. This happened when I was about 11. It's burned into my memory like it happened yesterday, and to this day, none of us can explain it. I don't tell this story much anymore. People either laugh or try to come up with some stupid scientific excuse. But I know what I heard. We all heard it. It was during a long holiday weekend. My aunt had planned a beach outing with her friends. There were 2 cars, ours and the one carrying my aunt and the rest of the adults. We had no idea where this beach was. It was apparently some hidden spot one of them had heard about. The idea was simple. We follow their car, they lead. We left mid-morning. Our car had me, my older cousin Nini, our driver, a quiet, serious guy named Sunday, and 2 of my aunt's friends. It was bright out, the kind of hot, sharp brightness that makes everything look overexposed. About an hour into the drive, we entered this huge industrial area outside the city. Long stretches of nothing but abandoned factories, twisted metal fences, storage containers, and the occasional massive oil tank. I remember how dead everything looked. Not a single soul in sight, just us. The buildings cast long shadows even though the sun was high. The whole place felt like it had been forgotten. We were chatting lazily about nothing, me and Nene arguing over some game, when the car ahead of us suddenly made a sharp, unexpected turn down a narrow road. Sunday reacted fast. He swerved to follow, tires screeching slightly. And then it happened. Right as we took the bend, a voice, loud, clear, inside the car. A man's voice, deep with a strange mocking tone. "Sharp bend, hmm?" it said. Not from outside, inside our car, like someone was sitting between us, laughing quietly to himself. Sunday hit the brakes so hard we all jerked forward. For a split second, no one said a word. The silence was wrong. I remember staring at Nanny. She looked frozen. One of the women in the back whispered, "What was that?" in a voice so small it barely came out. Then, like something out of a horror movie, we noticed the car in front had stopped too. Same abrupt stop. The driver's side door swung open hard and fast. My aunt jumped out, her face pale. Actually pale, which was strange for a woman with skin darker than mine. She stood there for a second, breathing heavy, like she couldn't believe what she was about to say. Did you hear that as well?" she shouted across to us. Everyone in our car answered at the same time. "Yes!" That was the first moment I felt real, paralyzing fear. Because it wasn't just us. It wasn't something weird with our car radio or one person hallucinating. They had heard the exact same voice. "Sharp bend, hmm?" she repeated like she didn't want to believe her own memory. Her friends stumbled out of their car next, crying. Not sobbing, just tears running straight down her face like she was too afraid to blink. "It was like he was in the car with us," she mumbled. "I thought it was you," she told my aunt. No one knew what to say. We stood there, two cars full of people, on an empty, cracked road surrounded by rusted-out buildings. Not even a single bird sound. No cars behind us. No wind. Nothing. Just that one horrible echo of laughter hanging in the back of my head. Sunday finally said something. "Let's leave. Let's not go again." Everyone agreed without argument. We turned around. Nobody said a word the entire drive back. The air inside the car felt thick. I kept checking behind my seat like someone might be sitting there, hiding, just watching us. Back at my aunt's house, we tried to talk about it, but it didn't feel right. Every time we brought it up, someone would get this look, like they wanted to throw up. The story just died, silenced itself, like it wanted to be forgotten. But I never forgot. I know what I heard. I know where I was. I remember the exact tone of that voice, like someone mocking us, like they knew something we didn't. And it wasn't just one car, it was both. We weren't listening to the radio, the windows were up, the area was deserted, no pedestrians, no construction workers, no one else around for miles. So tell me how the same voice, with the same words, was heard by two different cars at the exact same moment. I still don't go near that area, ever. I Googled later and couldn't find anything about accidents there, or ghosts, or urban legends. Story 6. I'm Nathan. I'm from Spokane, Washington. I've never really been into ghost stories or paranormal crap. I've always been more of a facts and logic kind of guy. But what happened that morning? God, I still don't have a clue what to do with it. It was late October 2017. I was 23. I'd moved back in with my mom for a while after losing my job. Her house is on the edge of town, sort of surrounded by woods. Quiet area. You hear everything at night. Owls, wind, raccoons banging around. I had the room in the back, facing the trees. That night I fell asleep around 2 a.m. after watching YouTube videos. I remember checking the time, plugging in my phone, and tossing it on the nightstand. Nothing felt off. No weird feelings or dreams or anything like that. Then just before dawn, maybe 5:30 or so, I jolted awake. not like a gradual wake-up. I snapped awake. I was lying on my back, heart pounding, completely still. Here's where it gets messed up. There was someone standing at the foot of my bed, not moving, not breathing, just standing. It was me. I'm not kidding. It was me, but not me now. It looked exactly like me. Same messy hair, same build. But I swear to God, this thing looked dead. Its skin was pale gray, lips purple, eyes wide open but glassy, like it wasn't seeing anything. It was barefoot and wearing the exact clothes I'd worn 2 days before. Black hoodie, faded jeans, even the tiny bleach stain on the sleeve. I couldn't move. I couldn't scream. I just laid there, staring at myself, dead, frozen, staring back at nothing. And then slowly, so slowly it made me want to puke, the thing tilted its head at me. Not curious, not confused. It was like watching a broken puppet try to move. It whispered something. Lips barely moved, but I heard it. You're not supposed to be here. That voice was mine, but layered with something off. Like two versions of me speaking over each other, slightly out of sync. I don't know how long I was paralyzed. A minute? Five? My eyes burned from not blinking. Then suddenly, just as fast as it appeared, it wasn't there. Gone. Just poof. I sat up, sweating, breathing like I'd run a marathon. I reached for my phone to check the time. It was 2:08 a.m. I blinked. Number, that wasn't right. I'd already been asleep for hours. It had been near sunrise. I remember the faint light outside the window. I looked at my phone again. 2:08, no notifications. My YouTube app was still open like I hadn't fallen asleep at all. I jumped out of bed, turned on every damn light in the room, and just stood there, staring at where it had been. I didn't sleep for the rest of the night. At 7, I heard my mom moving around in the kitchen and went out like nothing happened. I was not about to tell her I saw my dead self standing in my room, but then it got worse. That afternoon, I was checking the laundry basket in the hallway, and at the bottom, buried under some towels, was the black hoodie and jeans, the same ones that thing had been wearing, folded neatly. I hadn't touched those clothes in 2 days. I swear on everything I've got, I didn't put them there. And I haven't worn them since. Story 7. I wasn't going to talk about this. Honestly, I've gone over it 1,000 times in my head, telling myself it was just stress, just my brain misfiring or whatever. But no explanation has ever really fit. And for some reason, I woke up this morning feeling like I had to get it off my chest. I live in Chicago, born and raised. I've worked downtown for years. Same route, same office, same coffee shop every morning. Nothing fancy. Just regular life. Anyway, this happened last November. Cold, but not snowing yet. I remember because I had just grabbed my usual coffee from the corner cafe on Adams and was walking toward my building, earbuds in, zoning out. Then out of nowhere, this voice in my head, not even really a voice, just a pull, told me to turn left down a narrow side street I'd never noticed before. Here's the thing. I'm not the kind of guy who takes detours. I'm a routine freak. But this urge hit me hard, like I needed to go that way. I figured, whatever, maybe there's a shortcut I missed all these years. So I went with it. It was this tight alley, walls real close together, the air suddenly colder, almost like the sun didn't reach there. I remember the sound change too. You know that soft city hum you get used to? It just cut out. Dead quiet, no wind, no cars, just my footsteps. About 15 steps in, everything just stopped. I don't mean I stopped walking, I mean everything stopped. My vision blurred, like TV static, but not just in front of me, all around. My whole body went numb, like I didn't have a body. It's hard to explain, but I didn't feel like I was standing anymore. I was just there, floating in this weird black space filled with shifting colors, deep reds, sick greens, and these disgusting oily grays. Then I saw them. I swear to God, I wasn't dreaming. These figures, humanish but off, started to appear through the noise, like static people in business suits. Their faces were stretched, like someone tried to paint a human but didn't understand proportions. No eyes, just black hollows. They all looked at me at once, every single one. and they froze like they were caught off guard. One of them pointed at me, and the others all twitched, sharp, jerky, unnatural movements. Then the space started collapsing, like the whole place was caving in on itself. One of them moved toward me real fast, but not walking, more like sliding. That's when everything snapped. I didn't wake up or anything. I was just suddenly standing at the corner of Adams and Franklin again, my regular route. Same coffee in my hand, only now it was cold. Hours had passed. My phone was dead. Not low battery, dead, like it had never been charged. I felt nauseous, like I'd just gotten off a spinning ride. My vision was swimming, and I had this pounding in my head that didn't stop for days. But worse than all that was this feeling I still can't shake, like I was never supposed to see that. Like something went wrong. The worst part, that alley doesn't exist. I went back the next day. It was just a solid brick wall. I checked maps, nothing there. Asked the barista at the cafe if there was ever an alley or construction or something. She looked at me like I was nuts. I even checked old photos of the street online. No alley, ever. I didn't tell anyone. Who would believe me? Hey, I stepped into a glitch in the world and saw some creepy things watching me from behind reality. Cool, right? I sound insane even typing this. But that's what happened. Story 8. I don't believe in ghosts. Let's get that out of the way first. My name's Derek. I live in Mobile, Alabama. Grew up in a pretty average single-story house. Cheap wood floors, creaky doors, peeling paint on the porch. Nothing fancy. Just me, my mom, and my older brother Eric, who was about 5 years older and a certified little thief. If something disappeared around the house, money, snacks, even my Walkman once, you could bet Eric had it tucked away in his room or traded it for God knows what. Anyway, this happened when I was about 10. It was summer. I remember that because school was out, and I had all the time in the world to obsess over this little spy kit I got for my birthday. You know the type. Cheap plastic gadgets, fingerprint powder, invisible ink, that sort of junk. One of the items was this intruder alert thing, a spring-loaded tripwire with a clock timer. You'd pull the pin, stretch the wire across a doorway or something, and if someone crossed it, it'd snap and stop the clock, giving you the exact time of the breach. So here's what happened. I'd been losing stuff from my room, small things like a flashlight, a few bucks, one of my Game Boy cartridges. Eric denied it all, but I wasn't stupid. I figured he was sneaking in while I was asleep and helping himself. So one night after everyone went to bed, I set up the tripwire at my bedroom door. Stretched the wire low enough so someone wouldn't see it, clicked the timer to midnight, and climbed into bed. I even stayed awake for a bit, trying to listen for footsteps. Eventually, I must have dozed off. Then out of nowhere, I was jolted awake. Snap. It wasn't just the wire. It was loud, like it had been yanked, not tripped. It actually startled me upright. My room was completely dark except for the tiny red LED on the clock, now frozen at 3:12 a.m. My heart was hammering in my chest. I turned my head slowly toward the door. No one was there. I sat frozen for a second, confused. I remember whispering, "Eric?" But the hallway beyond the open door was pitch black. No sound. No footsteps. Nothing. And then, slam, my door shut. Hard, like the kind of slam that shakes the walls. I jumped so bad I nearly fell out of bed. I swear to you, the air in the room changed instantly. It was heavy, oppressive, like walking into a room that hasn't been opened in years. It wasn't the wind. I knew it wasn't the wind. I don't even think the window was open. And here's the thing that still makes my skin crawl. The tripwire. It had been pulled into the room. The wire was snapped and the tension was yanked inward, toward me, like something had entered, not exited. I just sat there. My mouth was dry. I couldn't move. I couldn't even blink. The door didn't open again. There were no more sounds. But something was wrong. Something felt wrong. Eventually, after maybe 10 minutes, though it felt like an hour, I got up, legs shaking, and opened the door. The hallway was empty. The entire house was dark. No TV on in the living room. No lights in the kitchen. I checked Eric's door. Closed. I pushed it open quietly. He was out cold, snoring like a chainsaw. Same with Mom. Everyone had been asleep the whole time. I should have felt relief, but I didn't. I went back to my room, turned on the lamp, and just sat there with the light on until the sun came up. I didn't say a word to anyone. Didn't touch the spy kit again. Left the broken wire on my desk for weeks before finally throwing it away. You know what's messed up? I stayed in that room for another 8 years. Nothing else ever happened. Not one weird thing after that. Story 9, I'm Jake, and I grew up in a small, quiet town in Arkansas. One of those towns where everyone knows everyone, and nothing much ever happens. Our house sat on a decent patch of land, and out back, there was this old wooden barn. It wasn't in use anymore, hadn't been for years. It leaned a little to the side, smelled like wet earth and rot, and creaked even when there wasn't wind. We mostly kept yard tools in there. Lawnmower, shovels, stuff like that. My dad used to say he'd tear it down someday, but he never did. It was a Saturday afternoon. I remember that because my mom had just finished vacuuming and my little brother Chris was inside watching cartoons. I was about 10, bored out of my mind, and figured I'd go out to the barn to grab the weed whacker. Not that I had any plans to use it. I just liked pretending I was helping out. I didn't tell anyone I was going out there. Just slipped my sneakers on and walked across the backyard, grass crunching under my feet. The barn was about 100 feet from the house, kind of tucked behind some trees. Once I stepped inside, the light changed. It always did. There was this thick, heavy feeling, like the air inside didn't move. Dust floated around in the narrow shafts of sunlight that poked through the cracks in the wood. I remember the smell hit me right away. Mildew, old gas, metal. I walked in and closed the door halfway behind me, out of habit. I was moving toward the corner where we kept the tools when I heard it. Jake. It was a voice. Low. Male. Raspy. The kind of voice that sounds like it's been smoked through 1,000 cigarettes. It didn't sound like my dad. Or my neighbor. And it definitely wasn't my little brother. I stopped. Just froze. Didn't turn around. Didn't breathe. For a second, I thought I imagined it. Maybe the wind moved something. But I wasn't facing the direction the voice came from. It wasn't behind me. It was to the right, in the shadows near the back of the barn. Jake. Again. Louder this time. Not yelling. Not whispering. Just steady. Like someone saying it because they already knew I'd hear them. I whipped my head around, and I don't know what I expected to see. Someone, maybe? A shadow, but there was nothing. Just the outline of the shelves, some hanging tools, and that empty open space that somehow looked darker than the rest of the barn. I wanted to speak. I opened my mouth to say something like, "Who's there?" But nothing came out. I turned toward the door, ready to bolt. But the second I took a step, I felt it. I swear on everything. I felt someone watching me, not in the usual way. This was direct, piercing. Like whoever it was could see inside my head. I didn't run. I walked. Slowly. Carefully. Like if I moved too fast, whatever was in there might react. As I reached for the door, I heard it again. Right behind me this time. Closer. "Don't go!" I didn't scream. I didn't cry. I just opened the door and walked straight out of the barn, still not looking back. I made it to the house and stepped inside like nothing happened. But my heart was pounding so hard I thought it might explode. My mom was in the kitchen. I walked up to her and said as calmly as I could, "Did you call me?" She gave me this weird look and said, "No. Why?" I shrugged. "I just thought I heard you." She stared at me for a second, then asked where I'd been. I told her I went to the barn. Her face changed immediately. I can still see it in my mind. All the color drained out. Her lips parted slightly like she was about to say something, but didn't. She didn't ask what I heard. She didn't even ask if I was okay. She turned around and called out, "Chris!" My little brother came running in from the living room, and she pulled us both close. Right there in the middle of the kitchen, she started praying. Hands on our shoulders, voice shaky. She kept saying, "God, cover this house, cover my boys, whatever it is, don't let it in." When she finished, I asked, "Mom, why are you scared?" She didn't answer at first. She looked over at Chris, then at me, then sat down hard in one of the kitchen chairs. "Chris just came to me," she said. "Not 5 minutes before you did. He said someone called his name. From outside. A man." We both just stood there. I didn't know what to say, neither did Chris. That night, my dad nailed the barn door shut. He didn't even ask why. Mom told him, and he just did it. No questions, no arguments. We never went in there again. Not once. Sometimes I think maybe it was just in our heads. Maybe we imagined it, or maybe it was some weird acoustics, or a neighbor messing around. But then I remember how it felt. That voice. The way it knew my name. Whatever it wasn't a person. And I don't think it was something that belonged in our world. I haven't been back to that house in years. I don't want to be. And that barn, if it's still standing, I hope no one ever opens it again. Story 10. I live alone in a quiet two-bedroom flat just outside Sheffield. It's nothing fancy. Plain walls, creaky floors, the kind of place where you can hear your neighbor sneeze through the walls. But I like it. It's mine. I've always been a tidy person. Everything has its place, especially money. So what happened last January still messes with my head. I haven't talked much about it, honestly, but maybe putting it down will help. It was the first week of January, maybe the 5th or 6th. I remember because the Christmas lights were still half hanging in the living room, and I was already annoyed at myself for not packing them away. That afternoon, I decided to clean my desk. Not a deep clean, just a post-holiday reset. The desk is L-shaped, sits in the corner of my small second bedroom that I use as a home office. Nothing weird about it. I'd left it a mess after Christmas. Papers, empty boxes, a half-used roll of wrapping paper. While I was going through the mess, something occurred to me. My mom had given me some Christmas money, 5 crisp 20-pound notes. I remember her handing them over on Christmas Day in a card with a cartoon Santa on the front. I'd shoved them onto my desk at some point during the holidays, telling myself I'd deposit them later. But now as I pulled papers aside and tossed old receipts into a bin, the money wasn't there. I wasn't worried. I assumed I'd moved it without thinking, maybe stuffed it in a drawer or put it in my jacket. So I didn't obsess. I just kept tidying. 20 minutes later, the desk was clear, totally bare. Wiped it down with one of those scented wipes. No money, no card.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again, after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please!
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
I shrugged it off. Then I turned in my chair to sort a box of old USB cables I'd pulled out from the wardrobe. It took me maybe 2 minutes, max. I was facing away from the desk. No sounds, no movement. Just me, crouched down, untangling a mess of wires and cursing myself for hoarding junk. When I spun back around, I froze. On the desk, my completely cleared off desk, there they were. 5 20-pound notes, fanned out neatly, like something out of a stock photo. Perfectly spaced, like they'd been laid down with intent. They hadn't been there moments ago. I know that, like I know my own name. I just cleaned that exact spot, wiped it, looked at it. Nothing was there. I didn't move. I sat there in my swivel chair staring. My first thought was that I'd missed them somehow. But no, that wasn't possible. They were in the middle of the desk, not under a folder, not tucked behind something. Center, displayed. I said out loud, "What the hell?" And the sound of my own voice felt out of place, like I'd broken something in the silence. I got up slowly, circled the desk. I even looked under it, like some idiot expecting to find strings or a trap door. I don't know why. The window was closed, locked. The door to the room was open, but no one else was in the flat. I knew that. I live alone. My front door was locked from the inside with the chain still latched. It had to be locked. No one could have come in. I didn't touch the money. I just stared at it. My hands were actually shaking. I walked out of the room and paced the hallway for a few minutes, trying to make sense of it. I even checked the front door again. Chain still on. Nothing looked disturbed. I went back into the room and the money was still there, sitting exactly the same way. Here's where it gets worse. When I finally picked them up, because what else could I do? They were warm. Not like room temperature warm, body warm, like someone had just been holding them. And I swear to God, this is the part I haven't told anyone because I know how it sounds. But for a moment, just a split second, I smelled my mom's perfume, that cheap floral stuff she always wears, like a burst of it, then gone. She's alive. She's fine. That's not the creepy part. The creepy part is she never came to my flat during Christmas. She gave me the card at her house. I never brought it home. I left it in my glove compartment because I told myself I'd take the money to the bank straight from work. So if the money was never even in the flat, how did it end up on the desk? I asked my mom the next day if she'd come over during the holidays without telling me. She laughed. Why would I do that? Besides, you'd know. You've got cameras. I do. I check them. Nothing. No movement. No one in or out of the flat for the entire day. The only person here that day was me. I ended up spending the notes. I didn't know what else to do. But I swear, every time I held them, it felt off, like they weren't really mine. And when I handed the last one over at the petrol station 2 weeks later, I remember feeling oddly relieved, like I'd passed something on, something I didn't want attached to me anymore. I've never seen anything like that since, but I moved the desk into the living room a month later. Couldn't stand looking at that corner anymore. I still don't understand what happened. I've replayed it in my head 100 times. I even considered getting a priest to bless the flat. I didn't. But I sleep with my bedroom door shut now, and I never leave cash lying around anymore.